Welcome to Tight 45. The old triple threat doesn't seem to be enough for my next guest. Yes, she can sing, dance, and act. Working with the likes of Hugh Jackman, Queen, Kelly Rowland, Ricky Martin, and even me briefly in the Good Shepherd Community Christian band. Ooh, nice. But more importantly than that, these days, she is now directing her butt off with short films, musical film clips, commercials, etc., and so forth. She's been in a bunch of musicals, right? West Side Story, Miss Saigon, Avenue Q, Fame, The Boy from Oz. So please welcome my next guest, producer, writer, director, oh, Rowena, have you seen her or been her? Rasmussen.
How's anyone meant to follow that?
Come on, huh? Look at me giving you props.
You also forgot to say that we actually dated.
I wasn't sure if I was going to bring that up, but all right. We did date. We were, high school sweethearts.
That's right.
And then from that, we used to, I joined the church, briefly became a charismatic Catholic. And yet, like we said, we were in a band together, the Good Shepherd Community. We used to go off.
You're on keys, you know, and vocals.
Yeah.
What the heck?
Oh, my God. With your brother playing, controlling brother playing guitar. And your mum.
He still plays for the church.
Does he?
Yeah.
If I come
Not
back
the
to
same the, one, different one.
If I come back to the church, will your mum lather me in holy water again?
Definitely.
I feel like she used to really throw that stuff on me. And I just want, I think it was because she had like, she just wanted to see if I would like burn. Like, I just go, ooh, it's getting hot. Like, she had her suspicions. I was like, I play for the church, all right? What more do you want from me? Huh?
Oh, Mum.
Oh, well, so
there's many stories there, but I guess another time.
Yeah, well, there is even before that, like, this is the weird thing. You're probably, other than my family, like, we knew each other from probably, like, 13, 14.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Where did you go to high school? You went to St. James.
I went to a plethora of high schools, but St. James is where we met, and you were going to the sister school, Olsch.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So,
we go way back.
Didn't I take you to your formal? I did.
Yes.
I got pictures.
You did. That's right. You did take me to my formal.
You know what the funny thing was?
Oh, my God.
It's not that I forgot all about that, but actually Alana was the one that said, why don't you get Rowena on? She's doing really interesting stuff. I was like, yeah, that's a good idea. But it didn't hit me until about 2 hours later that we had dated, we were high school sweethearts, I played in the band.
Yes. We went to church together.
Yeah, we did.
Oh, God.
Huh? Those weird old days.
I mean, I haven't spoken to you. I know. The thing is, since you asked me about this, I was like, I started to think about the good old days in Melbourne. And, you know, we haven't spoken for probably like 10 years now.
Isn't that weird that you can say that?
I think. Yeah.
Everything for me feels like 5-6 years ago. Like, oh, yeah, it's 5-6 years ago or whatever. And it's just like, no, like, you know, the times that we're talking of now are 25 years old, some of those things.
Yeah.
Longer than that, yeah. If you go back to it's crazy.
Yeah.
But let's talk more about you and what you're doing in regards to your situation. Now, I find it interesting, and because you brought it up and, you know, we have known each other so long, I think it's kind of cool to see your trajectory from working in Kmart, right, to then, working in a bank and then doing some casual dance classes at the age of, like, I think you started to get back into it like 2021, which is for dancers and performers doing casual classes at that point. You would think it would just not think, but it's unusual for then fast forward a few years and you're getting main roles in, you know, like West Side Story and you did Fame and all these kind of big things, because at that age, you're, especially as a woman in the industry, you're kind of considered old. You can't, in regards to getting back into it, but you really, you know, they were major musicals. And what kind of gave you the tenacious audacity to kind of make those bold moves?
I mean, to be absolutely frank with you, it was a dance concert that I saw Aaron, your brother, in.
Oh, really?
I saw him. I went to his dance concert with you.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing, and I think I was 20 or 21 at the time, and I was like, oh, I really love dancing. I miss it so much. I'm just going to see what happens. I go back, but I actually started doing casual classes, and then I went and did full-time for like 6 months at Dance Factory.
That's right. I remember that.
Good old Dulcie Lee.
Yeah, Dulcie Lee, mate.
So then I went and did that. Yep. And I didn't know what was going to happen next. I wasn't even really interested in, you know, doing musicals as such. Not that I wasn't, but that wasn't my focus. I just saw the dancing and I was like, I fucking used to love that. Am I allowed to swear on this thing?
Yeah, swear away. Fuck yeah.
I used to love dancing, and it wasn't a choice for an actual career. It was just an artistic choice. I'm 21. I don't have any responsibilities. I'm going to go and dance because I would love it.
Yeah.
And then from there, all these kind of opportunities just happen because just the focus was I just want to dance again. And then all of a sudden I started doing gigs and whatever. So that's kind of how it all happened.
Because I remember when you were doing, which one was it? Dance World?
Dance Factory.
Dance Factory.
Yeah.
And you know, I was looking at pictures when you used to actually take pictures, because I've still got some pictures, right? And it's I've got some pictures.
Can you take a photo and send that to me?
It looks like you're in fucking Rocker Stedford. You're like in this like, you know, purple sequence thing. And it just looks like what it is, which is a dance school. And then, we kind of obviously went our separate ways. And then, you know, all of a sudden, years later, it's like, oh, Rebecca's like, oh, I'm doing Fame with Ruin. I'm like, what? Say what?
Yeah.
So take me through that then. What was your first gig after that? And it's worth saying too that you weren't like you had danced, and I think maybe you had danced with Emily, even my wife, at some stage at a dance school. But you had a massive break. Like, I don't know when you stopped, but
7 years.
Seven years.
I stopped when I was
right?
14.
Which is exactly. It's a long time.
It's a long time, and those are the years normally, like as a teenage dancer, like that's when you refine. So when I actually went back and started dancing again, I felt like I was a beginner.
Yeah.
But there was just, I don't know, there was just something in me where I was just like, I really want this so badly. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure, you know, other people can relate where they just, you know, at that point their skill level's not great, but you just want it so badly. So you work your ass off every second that you're dancing. And you know, I think I did have good training. I had ballet training. I went to the same school as your wife.
Yes.
And so, you know, there was that mentality as well. And I just think time and place as well, and luck at the same time as hard work. You know, I don't think I'm just as lucky as, I mean, I don't think it's just all hard work. I think luck has something to do with it as well.
Well, sure. Like right time, right place, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But do you remember that first gig out of the school? Was it like a commercial dance gig, or what was that? What was the first professional thing that you did outside of that?
I'm pretty sure it was a gig for Alana Scanlon, who's like one of the old school, she's still around, you know, like choreographers and stuff in Melbourne.
Uh-huh.
But it was with Ash Wallen, who was the choreographer for that Hugh Jackman movie.
Yeah, right, okay.
I can't remember what it's bloody called.
That's
but
right.
Anyway, but I was with him. He was the choreographer for that gig. And I just remember kind of going, oh, I'm gigging now. Hang on, sorry, it's my phone.
That's all right.
And
so what,
back
up dancing, that kind of thing?
Yeah. So I was dancing for corporate gigs and, you know, I wasn't doing that much backup dancing back then, not in Melbourne. But it was, I don't know, I still had imposter syndrome, I felt, as well. Because I was older.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I started to gig when I was 22.
Which for the people at the dancing world and having a seven-year break that aren't in that industry is like, for people, you kind of can almost get written off, where it's like, oh, you haven't danced for 7 years and you're coming back into it now. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I can understand why you may have felt that way, because the industry itself isn't that welcoming sometimes to those kind of ideas and things, right?
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of, you know,
this bitch thinks she is, right? Coming in after 7 years. We've been here this whole time. No, not happening.
Yeah, where'd she come from?
And she's Filipino. So,
I mean, that's how it all began, really. Yeah. But actually, it was a time where I felt like diversity in dances was definitely coming through. So that helped me. That's what I mean by luck.
Yeah.
I had like a fringe and hectic black blunt hair. So they were like, oh, let's get the Asian in, I think.
Right.
And I think that was the same thing for, because my first professional musical was We Will Rock You, which was 2 years later. So, yeah. And, you know, they wanted to bring diversity in there. And I think that it worked in my favor as well.
Well,
not that I'm saying that I, you know, didn't earn the gig, but at the same time, you know, I'm realistic.
Exactly. I find with those post-apocalyptic kind of futuristic things, they're always inviting, like whether it be like Blade Runner-y or that kind of thing, where there's this future kind of Asian-ness in it as well, right? It's like, oh, it's in the future. Yeah, there are Asian people then. Just, but if we're doing something now, it doesn't necessarily exist, right?
Yeah, look at TV. Yeah. Look at all the TV shows.
Exactly. It's getting better now, though. I'm sure you've seen the shift, but I remember, it's getting a little bit better.
How much of a shift? A little bit, but, you know.
Oh, no, it's certainly still needs improvement, vast improvement. But I know when I did the High Flyers was, I got a main role in that TV show, but it was because it was set in a circus where, you know, they like to use the words exotic. It's like, oh, it's exotic. So, and I'm not, do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, exotic. It's like, okay, so it's in true. A circus, so this guy can be Asian, or I was playing a Spanish character at that point, but and they were open to diversity with that. But in again, that's a circus is outside of the realm of every day. Now, once post that, despite my acting skills or not, whether I was good or bad, I've always said is irrelevant because there were no auditions for me, and they were just outright
saying,
"Oh, we don't." Some of those places just go, "Yeah, we don't really have Asians on the books. They're just not." It's just not there.
I'm did like, you okay. really get that?
Yeah, man.
Oh, wow.
So Aaron got that too.
Oh, my God.
I was saying in regards to musical, his agent, who's supposed to be championing him, he was doing Bye Bye Birdie, and his agent said, I won't put you up for it because there weren't any Asians in the 1950s. And then we went to the musical. There's a fucking Asian guy, you know, play in the ensemble, and it's just like, if your agent isn't going to champion you, right? Who the fuck will?
Oh my God,
it's crazy.
There weren't any Asians in the 1950s. Oh God. Anyway,
it's crazy. Well, while we're on that topic, right?
Yeah,
there is a quote, and I know this just because we grew up together in regards to it. Where is it? Oh yeah. Here it is. This is for, what was it? Oh yeah, here it is. I don't see you as an Asian, right?
Oh, I don't see you as Asian.
I don't see you as Asian. Like unpack that for me, because I think you put it in one of your works, right?
Yeah, well, it was a work in development last year for a film that we were meant to shoot, but obviously then August hit and shit hit the fan. But anyway, I found I just wanted to create something that was narrative-based but expressed through dance, because I just think that, you know, it allows for expression outside of words, obviously, you know. But I just think that that phrase was really something that stuck out for me growing up. Because obviously you and I, we sound pretty Aussie, right? Like, I think sometimes, you know, I'm on the phone to somebody and then I meet them in person and then they're like, oh. And I don't think people say it anymore, but people used to say it to me all the time. Oh, my God, I didn't realize you were Asian. You sound so Australian.
And at
the time I used to be like, oh, yeah, you know, and in my mind it was something I was proud of. I was like, oh, cool, I sound really Australian and that's a good thing, because – sounding Asian is something to be ashamed of, or something like that was the kind of like underlying
100%
subtext of how I was thinking without even knowing that.
Yeah, because there's a certain amount of brainwashing even to the people, say the victim or the ones that are being, you know, kind of, in a way persecuted for who they are, but it's, you know, the Australian way is really subtle. Like I said, it's not necessarily like, well, people will say, well, we're not racist. No, of course people are welcome. But say when I was auditioning for things, if you looked on TV, radio, any kind of creative situation where, you know, the majority of people that were controlling it were, you know, middle-aged men, was that there were no Asians, let alone any kind of ethnicity on things like Neighbours, right? Home and Away. And then, you know, even as a host, as what I do now is like, it's all Jacko, Sammo and Davo, and it's just the same kind of lineup all the time. And there was, if you were an alien looking down going, oh, I wonder what kind of people live in Australia, just by what they were broadcasting, you just think everyone was white.
Or the really hot Asian. Like there's no like average looking, I mean, that sounds terrible, but you know what I'm saying? Like if they're going to cast someone, even now, if they're going to cast someone on Home and Away, it's like the super hot Asian.
Yeah.
It's not like your person next door Asian.
Nah.
It's someone that's like super hot with a rig. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, hang on, isn't there any in between here?
No.
Like, can't we just have regular looking everyday people that you see down the street? Can't we just do that?
Yeah.
Nah.
And then the writing's bad too. So what would happen was, and
Yeah.
And I know this, especially, you know, even in America for black people was a big gripe, was like, yeah, I can get this kind of side role, but it's not going to get me anywhere really, because it's like you've just, some fucking white dude's written this for me to be this weird sidekick guy that doesn't really fucking exist, right?
Yeah.
And you think it's like, it just, you know, you can't polish a turd. And I think that those roles for Asians were always, always stereotypical in Australian, always.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, yeah, there's some things that have come out recently that are quite good, but still, I every time I see anything for Home and Away or Neighbours even now, I'm just like,
oh my God. I know.
Is this 2022? Is it 2022? People kidding me, yeah? I'm going to punch someone in the fucking face.
Dude, I know. That's partly why I gave up acting, was there was nothing there. Even the schools and things like that weren't interested in me. And
I
feel like, you know, I can be completely honest with, you know, with my singing stuff, a lot of it wasn't always great or whatever it was. But in acting, if I'm going to be honest, I felt at the time that I could act. And even with the TV show when we were dating, they got me a dialect coach to say I was acting, and I think it was good acting. They weren't used to it yet in regards to like, you know, I don't know why I need to be in school. You know, the circus is my life, right? And I'd say it like that, and they go, you got to do it like this. I don't know why I've got to be in school. The circus is my life. And that would make me.
Are you for real?
Yeah, I got an Aussie dialect coach, and I already had, you know, an Aussie accent. Not that that fucking matters. I'm playing a Spanish guy, right?
Yeah.
In rural.
I didn't even know that was happening. I can't recall that at all, but God damn.
And guess.
They wanted you to sound like the people on the radio.
Yeah, and they only gave it to me. It wasn't a coaching thing for the others.
Everybody.
It was me, and he told me how to say my lines, which fucking really pissed me off, because I look back now and I was saying things quite natural, the way that people talk, the way that we're talking now. And they'll make me do this thing. And it's all this weird kind of fucking nasal thing, and I had to copy it sometimes word for word. And it wasn't because I wasn't being clear with what I was saying. They wanted me to have some weird fucking Aussie generic accent.
Yeah, right.
And if it was like, okay, listen, you guys are rural country, you've all got to come in, they weren't doing that. You know what I mean? It was just for me.
Oh, that wouldn't go down now at all.
A lot of the stuff wouldn't go down now, you know?
So true.
And people are calling them out on it. I know that it hasn't improved to the degree of which is fair, but I will say that people are going, hey, what's going on? Not happy, Jan.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same. That's your reason for stopping is exactly the same reason why I stopped acting, even though I didn't get anything. I was trying to get auditions for stuff, and there was nothing ever there for me. There was nothing local. I never got a chance to audition for Home and Away or Neighbours, anything local, nothing. There was just nothing for me. And then if there was anything, I was cast as a Filipino maid
nice
once, and yeah, nice, and or the Oriental something rather. Do you know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
And I was just like, this is bullshit. And this was 10 years ago. I was like, this is bullshit.
Yeah.
What the fuck am I doing?
Yeah.
I need to do something else. So I just kind of just glazed over with the acting. I was like, there's nothing here for me. It's not like there was lots of roles, and obviously I wasn't very good, so I wasn't getting anything. There were just no roles.
Yeah, you weren't getting.
And there were no auditions.
Yeah. You weren't getting beaten by other people of color. You would
no.
just get.
No, no. You just there weren't getting. Nothing.
There's nothing there, right? And the only stuff I ever got was when I moved to Sydney. The auditions I would only get, and there were few and far between because we're mostly Australian films. But when it got, it was American movies that would, and I don't think they're necessarily great either in regards to it, but they were the only people that I would get a look in.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So same. Interesting stuff.
There's only a few anyway. Yeah.
So is that why you kind of took on the director's chair in regards to what you were doing, or was it just that it just felt like a natural movement?
To be absolutely frank with you, I felt like I'd done my dash with musical theatre. Like I just got to a point where I was on stage, and the difference between when I first got on stage and how I felt, I was like obsessed with it.
Sure.
I couldn't think of anything else, to the moment where I was like, I don't think this is for me anymore. I remember being really self-aware on stage, like as if I was looking in on myself.
Uh-huh.
And I just went, I'm not in this at all.
Yeah.
And I would do show after show after show. I'm singing a song by myself. I would do show. I'm not going to say which show, just in case anyone listens to this. But I was doing show after show. I'm singing this song and I'm literally in my own mind looking in on myself. And I said, I don't love this anymore. So I stopped and I went, oh, and I actually started studying Chinese medicine. For years.
Really?
And I was happy. Yeah, I was happy doing that. I loved it. I still love it now. But then somehow, because Joel and I started, my husband, we started choreographing for like different ads and things like that. So we started doing that and we were doing that quite a bit. And I saw the inner workings of a film set for the first time, not as an actor, but as a creative on there. And I started to just get so interested, and I made relationships with all the directors, and they were really great. And they'd be like, oh, I'm doing this, and telling me about lens choices and all this kind of stuff. And then I was obsessed.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and then from that point on, we made a short film at one point, and I didn't really know what I was doing. And then it kind of just grew from there, and things started to kind of fall into place, and people wanted me to direct their music videos, and you know, I made a short film. I went to AFTERS. I went to film school, which was great, and learned so much there. But, yeah, it wasn't like, oh, I love musical theatre and let's try something. It was literally I fell out of love.
Yeah, but it's such a bold move because, you know, to be in front of, and especially with the roles that we're getting, I know that a lot of people that say are in ensemble and they can't quite make the move to, you know, a lead role and things like that was that, you had kind of done that and worked your way up to the top and you were getting some really good roles and people knew your name. And then also I'll just see you like dancing behind Jessica Malboy and doing these kind of other dance gigs as well, is that you were quite predominant at that point and it seemed like it was going in a positive way. So it's a massive move to kind of go to let go of that performance side of things. But again, I think you just kind of followed your heart. And I know that you would know a lot of people in musicals, theater that are just doing it by, you know, coloring by numbers a little bit there. Like I reckon there's people they've been there like 15, 20 years, like, yeah, you know, whatevs.
It's my job.
It's my job. And I think that's so dangerous in a creative aspect, you know?
I mean, I think it is dangerous. And I think that as, you know, as a human, in any, whatever you do, whether you're an artist or not, you got to have some sort of creative outlet. And for me to have my creative outlet was my job and then not enjoy it.
Yeah.
I think it was really, and the thing is, I want to be honest with you, I did it for 5 years too long.
Really?
And yeah, it went on for ages and I kept thinking to myself, don't be ungrateful. You're getting this, you know, you're getting this and you're getting that. You should keep doing it. It'll come back. And it just never did. And I'm not saying that I will never do it again.
Sure. Of
although
course not.
I have said that. But at this point in my life, I just, again, I thought, I'm just going to follow my heart, which is I found this new passion and it literally lit a fire bigger than I felt like I've ever had.
Yeah.
You know, to direct, whether or not anything big comes out of it, I wasn't in my mind, you know, of course I wanted to do this, this and this and this. But I just think that, you know, God, it sounds so wanky right
say
now,
it.
But
say
I'm going to say it.
Say it.
I'm going to say it. I think you just have to follow your heart. Oh, God. You can punch me in the face virtually if you want.
But there's sometimes there's no other so fucking wanky way to say it, but with a bit of cheese on top. How else are you going to say that? You know what? Follow your dreams. It's all it's all fucking cheesy. Be your authentic self. Like,
yeah, but it's true.
But you have to say there is no way around saying those kind of, you know, things because they're true. And if you hadn't done that, it's like I said, you know, I guess in relation to that, you know, I felt that way with like jazz gigs and I've been asked to do a bunch recently again. And I kind of made that decision. It's like, nah, it's, that's just me doing my tired stuff. I went through all my books and threw the music away, you know, so I couldn't get back to it.
But I was going to ask you whether you're still doing it or not, but they're in the bin now.
They're in the bin. But you know what I've got? I've got this garage band that I write original music with. Again, like what you're saying just in relation to you is that I don't know if it's going to go anywhere. I feel like it is, and you always got to have that feeling. But just playing in the garage as we're doing at the moment, writing original songs and not getting paid, I fucking rather be doing that on a Tuesday night than performing jazz on a Friday night and not feeling it, you know?
Yeah, 100%. I totally agree with you. You can't keep doing it if you don't love it anymore. You know, as artists, you're going to destroy yourself. You're going to self-combust internally, I reckon.
Yeah.
That's how I felt anyway.
Well, I know, you know, especially in the musical theatre world and that kind of thing, when I talk to people that I know are over it, there's not much to say. And it's like it's hard to stimulate a conversation with those people because their hearts are dead. They are. They're just like, yeah, it's okay, bye. Like there's no more fun about it. And then for them as a person, I think they struggle with it. You know, that's a massive blanket statement. I'm not saying all people are like that. I know people that fucking love it. But I think sometimes if you don't have other avenues of creativity, then you get stuck in a rut and you got to make those bold choices and go, I want to try this.
Quick question. Can you hear everything that's happening outside my door?
A little bit, but that's okay.
Is it okay? Yeah. Should I tell them to be quiet? They're literally entertaining my son because he is obsessed with me. Is that okay?
I think so. Like you can tell them.
Can I tell them to turn it down?
Maybe. Okay, sure.
Let me just give me a sec. This is the moment that you edit out, hey?
No, it's fine.
Hang on a second. Oh, you're going to love this. So my mum lives with us right now, mum and dad. Your face.
Oh, you poor thing.
But they live with us. My mum's singing Old MacDonald.
I can hear her.
Yeah, I believe you. She's putting vibrato on it.
She's got the vibrato on it.
Can you tell mom to stop singing so loudly? And can you guys try to be quiet a little bit? Okay, thanks. Bye. Hilarious. She's going, ki-ya-ya-yo.
Yeah, the vibrato. I love that.
Anyway, oh, I tried my best there.
Why?
Yeah, so my mum and dad live with us at the moment.
Joel and I can pop a beer and share old war stories.
Oh, he'd love you. He would fucking love your ass so much.
Because I could relate.
He'd love you. You guys are a ball. Oh,
man. So what's it like in regards to now that Joel's we're talking about him, what's it like working with him? Is it, you know, because you guys are obviously married and he's what, like DOP? And right? So how does that work? Is it are you kind of – how do you work that out as a couple?
Well, we're both really obsessed with the same things. So it's not hard to work together because I think we have the same work ethic. So when whenever we're on set, we're always like, it's like we're pushing kind of the set, like, you know, I want to keep moving, get the next shot, get another one, whatever.
Right.
So that's the good thing. Like, we literally have the same work ethic. We're both kind of obsessed with the same kind of stuff.
Right.
We never kind of settle for, if I don't like what he's doing, I'll tell him. If he doesn't like what I'm doing, he'll step in and say. So, I mean, he definitely stays in his lane with DOPing, but I'm always happy for him to have an opinion. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm the same. I'm the same with Lani, where she'll go, I don't know if I like that, like the song or whatever. And then I'll walk out, storm out. And then I'll walk back in about 3 minutes later, go, make sure you always tell me that. Okay. Don't ever lie to me.
You need the truth.
Don't ever lie to me. Even if I get annoyed.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, it's the same thing. And then, you know, he edits a lot of our stuff and I'm pretty blunt.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, as much as it hurts, you got to. How are you meant to grow?
Well, you know.
How the fuck are you meant to grow if the person you trust the most can't even tell you the truth?
Exactly, dude. Especially when you're working with each other creatively. And there is.
Yeah.
You know, because you're in this world and I guess, you know, because I've filmed a few things in the past as well, in regards to your kind of the way that you guys get the grain and texture and quality of your film, right? And you'll know what I say, there's sometimes this kind of Aussie neighborsy type kind of film quality to stuff, especially music film clips. And I know it's done on sometimes it's budgetary, but I'm pretty sure, I don't know if you agree with me, that sometimes you can make a cheap thing look good, right? And I feel like you guys have worked with budgets and everything that you do just has that kind of either American or European grain to it and texture.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
I think I know what you're saying. I mean, to be absolutely frank, I feel like Joel and I are still in Rookieville. Like, you know what I mean? And we just try to emulate, you know, people that we love in film. You know, he's got his DOPs that he loves to watch. I love, like, old school films. Like, we still watch E.T.
Yeah.
And, you know, Back to the Future. And,
sure.
But then I love the grimier films from the 90s. Like,
yeah,
you know, Requiem for a Dream and Trainspotting and shit like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to be honest, I don't know how much I can comment on, you know, film stuff and whatever. We just try to emulate our heroes.
Yeah,
really, that's what we're trying to do. We're still growing, we're still learning, we're still, I feel like we're green as fuck still, but
I know, but you know. Must be able to see some of that quality sometimes. I know that nothing is ever perfect, especially for the creative, but it's like there is a quality there that isn't in a lot of other, say, music film clips and short films, that is just, I don't know, like, is it the fucking lenses? Is it the treatment that you do in post? Like, obviously, your choreography and things like that, it often falls short for me for a lot of independent artists, because I think when it comes to film, for a lot of artists, it's like an afterthought. It's like, oh, okay, we'll just do the film clip. But that, you know, obviously you don't fucking walk into it like that, because it's part of its story as well, right?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, it goes in, a lot of it is in planning. You know, if we want to shoot outside, we don't just shoot any time of day. We have to try to get the best light, all those things that I'm sure you know about.
And, yeah.
Amelie talks about as well, but, you know, trying to do that. And you know, Joel's pretty good at making shots look beautiful. He is. He's really good at it, you know. He's obsessed as well. He's on his phone constantly watching his heroes and seeing how they do things and whatnot. So,
yeah.
And the good thing about doing music videos is it fucking teaches you how to do it really fucking quickly.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we shot a music video up here near Byron at the start of February. And we, I don't know if you've seen it, but there's a lot of shots and there's a lot of locations, but it's like we've started to refine this run and gun shit, but it's not run and gun without lighting. Like, we still light everything pretty much.
Yeah.
Everything that we do. But yeah, it's just like it teaches you to work fast and, you know, tricks of the trade and trying to get the beautiful, you know, lighting quality in there and all that stuff.
Well, it's not uncommon. Yeah. You know, you probably know this too, is that when I go through people's directors' bios and things like that, is that a lot of them started off doing music film clips, you know?
Yeah.
Because it helps them tell that beginning, middle, and in a certain amount of time with a certain amount of budget, and to work with multiple people, it's a really good training ground for the feature film.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. Like, and especially, you're not going to love every track that you're given as well. It might not be your cup of tea, and trying to make that into something is sometimes really tricky. I've said no to some because I'm like, I can't do this. I really can't figure out. Like, it just doesn't click in my head, and I literally am like, I can't direct this because I can't see it in my mind. So knowing when to say no as well is probably a really good thing. I mean, we're older now too, you know. It's like, I'm not fucking doing that.
Exactly. I always say it. I'm too fucking old for that shit. Not for me to do the job, but to put up with crap.
I'm like, I'm just going to do the things I love now, I think. And whatever happens next, fucking happens next.
Yeah. So in regards to your move, right?
Hmm.
What spurred that on? Because you've lived in, you know, kind of major cities, especially in Australia, your whole life. How do you find that transition?
Yeah, so I do live 20 minutes from Byron now. Apparently, a whole heap of creatives have moved here recently, so I need to bloody touch base with whoever's around. I haven't had a second yet, but I think it's the big city. I've always wanted to kind of get out of the big city.
Mm.
I've always connected with like the country and whatnot, but I think it's more so it's creative as well as a family choice. You know, I got kids now.
Yeah, you got two.
And I want
them
to be kind of out of the buzz. Yeah, I got two. Want them to be out of the buzz.
Mm.
But also, I feel like, you know, there was a fear that we weren't going to be able to shoot as much stuff. But when we know we've got another couple of projects coming up soon, and it doesn't feel like anything's changed, to be honest, in terms of work.
So you don't get ever bored or whatever because you've grown up in big cities like that?
No, I love it. I love the quiet. I used to hear every morning, a few times a morning when I lived in Sydney, where we used to live, I used to hear the fucking rubbish bins.
Yeah.
Like three times a week. Now all I hear is birds. I'm like, yes.
I lived in Potts Point in Jade McRae's house for like 6 months or something like that. And it was just when it was real shit, right at the end where, like, you know, that seedy side was like prostitutes and like there was a homeless center downstairs.
Something I love about that side though.
And it's like, welcome down the street. People try to sell me fucking video recorders and stuff they just stolen.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
So, yeah, but there is, I guess it is good to do that kind of stuff in your 20s. But I only ask because I'm flirting with the idea too. We went to Brisbane and got out a little bit. And I don't know if it's like the idea in my head, if I could kind of, because I can do all this stuff like we're doing it now. I still like person to person. And I got to be in the scene a little bit. But yeah, I've always flirted with the idea of moving out, you know?
I mean, my advice. Do it. And, you know, I think a fresh environment as a creative is always good too. Your mind is like, all of a sudden you're like, oh, I can think properly for some reason. You know, I think sometimes being in the biggest city, you just, it's hustle, hustle, hustle. And, you know, you never, it's not often that you get time to just breathe. Yeah. That's why I love it.
Yeah. Well, you might see me in the neighborhood. Hey, Calixto, how's it going, brother?
You can hang out with my mum.
Please no. Hello. How did you find this now? Like in regards to, you know, won't do a deep dive or anything, but because we both went through it, I think it's an interesting topic in regards to religion and also coming out of that as well, possibly. Because I found there was for my own person like a lot of guilt, fear, and shame coming out of it. Because I thought, you know, you go through that weird transition of like, I'm doing the wrong thing and I'm doing something towards whatever, God, whatever it is, right? Did you struggle with that? Surely, because we were in the thick of it. We were in the thick of it, people.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I feel like it's, I've got post-traumatic stress from it.
I do.
And I'm not, I don't, yeah, yeah, I don't, I'm not. you know, everyone has the right to believe whatever they believe, but whatever I went through, I felt like was a negative experience.
Yeah.
And so now my whole family is still really religious, or they wouldn't call themselves religious. They call themselves, you know, Christians or whatever they want to say.
Yeah.
And I still believe in God and I have my own faith, but I don't belong to a group.
Yeah.
And they find that like really scary.
Yeah.
And they, you know, I've been called a non-believer and stuff, like as if I'm a non-believer. But I'm like, hang on, I just told you I do. I just don't exactly follow the same thing. So I feel like, I don't know, you know, it's such a personal experience
that it is.
It's hard to comment, you know, on a platform like this about it without going too deep, but like
you don't have to be deep. I think if you keep it about yourself, then you don't really offend anyone because you're not saying that it's wrong. Well, from my point of view, I'm not saying it's wrong or right, but I'm just saying it wasn't right for me. For instance, like, you know, a date night for us was going to fucking Bible study, right? And at 21,
didn't you love it?
Like, and when I say Bible study, guys, I'm not talking about a 45-minute class. I'm talking like 3-4 hours with everyone singing with the parents,
holding hands,
testifying, right? And I remember when I was walking out, because you were like, don't, like, you, I think you could feel me kind of separating from it. And maybe I feel that I felt like, because we were 20, 21, that you wanted that
younger,
too.
I think.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we started earlier.
Yeah.
But I wanted to be, and of course, then what happens is you overcorrect, and I just did.
And you go the opposite
everything.
Way. Oh my God, that's exactly what I did.
Yeah,
I like literally up until I gave birth to my daughter. Okay, not up until, but until I got pregnant, I was wild.
Yeah.
Because hang on, my family's home. I'm just doing an interview. Hi. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, you gotta. It's like. You've got to find that status quo. Now, what happens is the weight is so heavy from the other side because the way that we, how much we did of it was redonkulous. And then, of course, to counteract that, you kind of go, oh, I'm going to do everything. And then, like, what you've found now is that you live in a small country town with two kids. You've got what sounds like a healthy relationship, working and personal. And it's like, so, yeah, I think that's why it's good to kind of try and find that balance early so you don't go off the rails.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, it's not an uncommon story.
Nah.
The good Christian or the Mormon girl all of a sudden is like at spring break. Cancun.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like just it's 100%. It's like what do you call it? Repression. And then all of a sudden the explosion comes out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I remember, I do remember when I made that conscious decision, like a weight just felt like it had been lifted off my shoulders. And at that point, I was only going out with some of the guys picking me up from church was just Filipino boys going to an R&B club. There was no taking drugs. They barely even drank, you know what I mean? Like it wasn't like this crazy thing. It was just like, oh, this is where I want to be on a Saturday night, just having a dance and having a couple of drinks and then going home. It was nothing at that point. Crazy. Do you know what I mean? It was just.
Yeah, yeah.
I just wanted
it
to be.
Being a normal.
I wanted to be fucking 21.
19, 20 year old. Yeah, yeah, exactly. It was just normal activity.
Yeah.
But at that time in that world, it was seen as evil.
Do you know what I mean?
So,
I do.
You know, it's perspective as well. Like if you. Yeah, it's demonizing things that aren't really. They're just absolutely normal.
Yeah.
So for us, what the fuck?
In regards to, listen to this, right? A young woman's mind fractures as she wrestles with an ungodly love and the faith that she was meant to, that was meant to save her. That's something that, was that Ellie was here or is that a different thing?
Yeah. Ellie was here.
So what, write what you know?
Oh, it's funny because my husband's like this. Are you writing, what are you writing about? Is this all you? Are you just like, you know, expressing your inner demons from when you were younger? Yes, is the truth. Although the story is actually told, it's not a reflection of my story at all.
Yeah.
That's the thing. But the underlying themes I feel really connected to.
Yeah, of course.
Which is what you just read.
Yeah. And how did that go? Like what was the situation there? That was a short film, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's a short film. I played at St Kilda Film Festival year before. It's, you know, it's something I haven't released it online. I should. But, those are the themes within that. I didn't even realize they were about my inner demons until I started writing, like thinking about, you know, all the press stuff that I had to write for it. I was just like, oh, hang on. Sounds really familiar to what I went through.
Sure.
You know, so, yeah. And then there was even a mother character in it.
Yeah.
And that scene got deleted, but it was very much a representation of, you know, my own relationship, I think, in a way. So, yeah, you write what you know. But, I mean, it's the same as songwriting.
Yeah.
How can you write about what you don't know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
You know what I mean?
It's always got to be a little part of you in there, even if you're writing a story about someone else, is that it's got to be relatable. Otherwise, what are you doing it for? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, and the next film that I want to write is I really want to go back to my Filipino roots and tell a story, like a horror story that actually happened to Carlo, my older brother, apparently. But they all believe that it did happen because he disappeared. He was an infant. He was 3 months old.
Yeah.
He was in the bed. He disappeared. They could not find him. The whole family was running around the house. And then they were like, oh, the Agta, which is a Filipino mythical creature, took him. So they made all this noise, all blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden he's back on the bed.
Witchy poo.
So I'm going to write a horror story based around that mythical creature and that story.
I dig it. I dig it, you know. The Koreans are killing it at the moment with that stuff.
Oh,
come on, a little bit of Filipino sprinkles, please.
Yeah, but it's based on a true story, so.
Oh my God.
You know what I mean?
Is that the goal, the ambition is to do a full-length feature?
I mean, absolutely, but, you know, even a short film takes up months of your life.
Oh,
so
yeah.
To do a full-length feature, I can't see that happening in the near future, but definitely, you know, obviously that's the dream.
Yeah.
That's the dream.
But how about, you know, and for people that haven't seen you in musical theater or perform in regards to singing, like you got a pretty good fucking voice. Like, do you still sing a little bit or it's just really something in the background for you at the moment or it's not? Because I remember when we grew up, you know, I didn't think much of you until I saw you sing No Doubt, Don't Speak, and I was like, I think I might be in love.
I don't see myself as a singer anymore, which is – and people always say to me that's really sad because – and I don't see myself as a dancer, obviously. I mean, that's long gone. But I just don't identify.
Mm-hmm.
It's a funny word to use right now, but I don't identify as a singer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So no, someone said to me, I'll give you $10,000 to sing at something. I'll be like, I can't do that. It's like for some reason, because I think I stretched it out for so long. I did 5 years too long of doing musical theater. I feel like I'm still like not traumatized, but.
I understand.
I want to separate myself from it so much that I don't even think of myself as a singer anymore.
Yeah.
Like I haven't sung for years and years now, like seriously, like I even around at home, I don't even sing, even try to sing seriously.
Yeah, right.
It's always just fucking around or,
yeah.
You know, taking the piss or whatever. But it's like I'm trying to distance myself from it so much because I was in it for too long or something. I don't know. I can't even tell you exactly why.
No, I know that thing. You know, Lani was a dancer. She's a painter now, right? I don't think she identifies, well, she doesn't identify as a dancer. She told me. I know a beautiful singer that was on the podcast that no longer does it and lives in the country.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. And
yeah.
I think to the viewer or listener, sometimes I'll be like, oh, you just kind of, I know you really want to do it. And I think there's a real thing, even with the podcast in regards to what I was doing was I wanted to take a break from that situation and just talk to artists, you know, and have that kind of dialogue. So it's a real thing. And you know, sometimes it's the healthier thing. And if you're doing something that you don't love just because you're good at it, it doesn't – that's not necessarily the right reason. Well, it's not the right reason in my book.
It's not. I think it's even – it's like I said before, I feel like it's soul-destroying.
Yeah.
Because you used to love it so much and then you're doing it and you don't love it and you remember that you used to love it. So there's
that's
all these emotions
the worst
happening
fucking
at the
feeling,
same time.
Isn't it?
Oh my God, yeah, it's terrible. Like, and then you're like, oh, all these people are smiling and they're loving it, and I'm not even being authentic. And you know, then this whole kind of like snowball happens.
Yeah,
and it's really unhealthy. I think it's really unhealthy.
So, how are you feeling now in regards to everything, and where are you at, you know, position wise and that kind of thing? You're happy? You're happy in what you're doing now in regards to directing and working that kind of avenue of things?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, since the middle of last year when we had, you know, those hectic lockdowns and whatnot, it was really hard to get back on the creative mindset, which I'm sure so many people have gone through, because all you're thinking about is your future and how you're going to make money and how you're going to support your family and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, it went from literally almost every day me saying to my husband, I've got an idea, and writing things down and writing ideas down on the constant, like much so that it was a bit, I was a bit like, I've got an idea. Now I'd be like, hey, Joel. And he'd be like, let me guess, you've got an idea. It's been a very long time, and only like a couple of weeks ago when I started thinking about this next short film that I want to do, that I had not come up with anything. So, I mean, now I feel like now that I've moved and whatnot, I feel like, you know, I think it'll come back and, you know, I'll get that creative rhythm again. But, you know, I'm happy with where I'm at. I'm happy with the projects that I've got coming up. I'm directing a documentary for a company called One Dance Collective from Sydney, and they do some beautiful things where, you know, we're living in a world of TikTok dancing, right? And thirst traps. I don't know if you know what that is. Look it up. Thirst trap. Okay. But TikTok dancing, and there's like this whole thing of the dancing is just for people to like you and all this kind of shit. Whereas this company, One Dance Collective, they're all about, you know, utilizing dance as a form of actual expression, which it should be.
Yeah.
And it's not for likes or, you know, popularity. It's actually like almost like I feel like they do it for meditation, all this kind of shit, you know, self, to help them in their lives and whatnot. But they create these beautiful pieces, which Joel and I are going to shoot. So we're doing that kind of documentary stuff and filming their pieces, which is nice, because even though, because Joel's a dancer, was a dancer too, that's even though right. We don't do that anymore, being really connected to the community, we're very much all about that. Like, I love being connected to the dance and artist community of singers.
100%.
Even though I don't do it anymore. Like, I don't want to do that and I don't want to be that, but I'm so connected to these people who are still, you know, trying to express themselves and, you know, create art and whatnot.
Well, you used to have to commit, like if you were going to see someone dance, you would have to get dressed and get ready and go to a performance, right? Or it was a film clip, or someone was doing something live. It wasn't like fucking 10-second vignettes of someone acting stupid or dancing in fucking lingerie or just people with no kind of, that haven't given any kind of real, you know, I don't know, it's not all like that. I don't want to be too judgy, but a lot of it is. Let's be fucking honest, you know?
Yeah, no, a lot of it is.
Right?
I mean, there's some great stuff on there, but a lot of the dancing is, you know, where's the core, you know? Yeah. And it's, like I keep saying, as wanky as it sounds, there's just not a lot of authenticity around.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of people that we want to connect with.
Yeah.
We just want to film things that are authentic, and, you know, whether or not I like your track or not, it's authentic to you. Great. Cool. Let's make something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? In terms of music videos and in terms of dancing, it's like, okay, you do this kind of wacky contemporary dance that I, you know, possibly in my mind, I'm like, oh, okay, that's really interesting. But because there's an authenticity to it, I'm like, fuck yeah, let's shoot that.
Yeah. Well, I think we, the world on a populist point of view got a taste of that with something like Chandelier, right, where people may not have known about contemporary dancing and that kind of grain and that kind of storytelling, but I think it was undeniable. I think it could have been, you know, a massive sports person or whatever it is, and you just go like, fuck, that's crazy. Like, that's amazing. You know what I mean? I think it just blew everyone's mind, that kind of thing. So I can see, you know, how powerful that can be in a short story like music film clip. But yeah, I'm so glad that you're doing that kind of stuff, because there's just too many short vignettes of swipe, 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 like, and it's just we got to put the you know, that real storytelling in it instead of just nonsense, and people that have fucking trained for so long and really showcase what they can do.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah.
Ah. Need a little Filipina director, huh? With a, you know, DOP. What the last name? Where is that from?
Rasmussen. Apparently, it's Danish.
Right.
Something.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Could see him as a kind of Viking-esque.
It's on the map, apparently. Rasmussen Land, if you look up something, like it's up the top.
Right.
My husband thinks it's a Viking name. I'm like, yeah, right. Although at the moment, he looks like a Viking at the moment. His beard's like this big.
Nice. Did you guys meet in a show?
Actually, we met for the first time in The Boy from Oz. So, but we were not friends at the time. He was like, because I'm older than him. He was 18, I was 26.
MILF.
Hang on. No, he was 19, Mavi, and I was 26. Yeah.
That's so good.
So that's where we met the first time, and then it was like 6 years later.
Hey, man, Brown, don't frown.
5 years later, we chatted because I was like, what am I going to talk to this 18-year-old about? At the time, but that was the one what's his name? Hugh Jackman.
And now look at you guys.
Now look at us.
Kids screaming, directing together. It's a beautiful thing. some Christians in the background. Right?
Yeah, the Christians in the background praying. Hilarious.
Oh, man. Hey, listen, dude, it was great catching up with you and finding out what you're doing, what you're all about, and I really dig it. And I think the world, but more so Australia, could really do with a Filipina female director, because that's a point of view, you know, and it does inform some of your choices. Like, oh, my God, like who would have come up with that Filipino horror story except for a Filipino, right?
Yeah.
So it's just about getting different points of view, because there are so many in Australia, you know, where they always go on about being multicultural, but then don't necessarily reflect that in the arts or broadcasting. And I'm just glad that people are saying, hey, fuckers, we're here.
Yeah. And I mean, like I am a bit saddened by the fact that when I look around, you know, the directors that are making it in Australia, hang on. Sorry.
It's all right.
I'm just going to start that again. Oh, bloody rabbit is chewing on something. Little rabbit. Anyway, so I am saddened by the fact that when I look around at the landscape of directors in Australia, you know, predominantly male is one of the big things, although there's some great Australian female directors that are doing massive things.
Of course.
I don't know any other – well, I don't know many Asian female directors. I don't know many Asian male directors in Australia as well.
Yeah.
You know, I think things are changing and they're giving opportunity, but then again, sometimes those opportunities are still even so hard to get. You have to, you know, tick so many boxes even get, you know, those opportunities. So, I mean.
I remember working with some directors and there would be this kind of shorthand talk that they had with other white Australians that just – and I'm a personable guy. I like to fucking talk, right? But
yeah.
I think that was there 20 years ago. It was like, I'll take this person under my wing. And I don't even know that they were aware that that's what it was. Do you know what I mean? But there was a difference in the way that they spoke to me opposed to other people. And I can see it very clearly. And it's not paranoia, which a lot of people think it, you know, might think it is. It's like, you see the difference. I see the difference.
You feel it. It's a big thing. You can feel people's energy as, you know, if they're treating you differently because of your race or whatever, you know, 100% you know.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's make the change. Come on.
I know.
It's hard.
I hope change is coming. It's taking so long, though. Like,
it is taking so long, but we've got to do it, you know.
Yeah,
got to do
that's
it,
right.
We've got to do it independently, because if I waited to be, you know, a broadcaster on popular radio, I'd be fucking waiting forever. You know what I mean? So we just got to use the avenues that we have and just groundbreaking people. Come on. Let's make it easier for our kids.
I know, right?
Yeah, it's true.
When are you going to have kids?
I tried last night, so good luck.
Yee!
We're trying.
Yeah.
I am getting on, but, you know, we'll see. But I want kids.
Yeah.
I want a little village. But I know you guys probably relate to this, but it's just always like, oh, God, I just don't have enough money.
You never have enough money.
I know.
That's just the truth.
Yeah.
Or time.
Yeah.
You never have enough money or time, but, you know, hopefully it happens soon.
Yeah, exactly. Or I could create so many little Filipinos and just start a little Nike factory in the back for the white people.
Oh, hilarious. Always the joker.
Huh? I'm allowed to tell those jokes, all right, because I'm half Asian. But you white people, don't repeat that one. It's not funny.
And it's your show. You can do whatever the heck you want.
Sometimes I tell like an Asian joke, and then I'll just say to the white people, hey, why are you laughing? Freak them out. Keep them on their toes. All right, I'm going to let you go, let you get back to your kids and your man. Say hello to the family for me. Let me know when the next church event is. but all the best. And, I hope you really it really happens for you, because the stuff that I have seen, I think it's really strong. You know, if we ever do a film clip, I might give you a call.
Do it.
Huh?
Call us. Collabo.
Put this beautiful Filipino face on. Put it where it belongs, in front of the people. All right, I'm going to let you go.
All right, cool. Thanks so much for having me on. And, you know, it's good to catch up and chat.
All right, darling. Good seeing you again. All the best. Hope to see your work on the big screen soon.